This is Clinical Conversations. I'm Joe Elia, and my co-host, Dr. Danielle Schurer of the Medical University of South Carolina, is here on the line with me. Hi, Danielle.
Hi.
Our conversation is going to be about a report in MMWR about a variant influenza virus called AH3N2V and the existence of at least some protection against the virus in the U.S. population because of antibodies cross-reactive to it. Those antibodies were found to be generally absent, however, in children under the age of 10. Our guests are Dr. Jacqueline Katz and Dr. Tim Uwecki from the CDC's National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases in Atlanta. Welcome to you both. Dr. Katz, the flu season is coming to its traditional end about now. These dozen cases of variant influenza, almost all of them in kids under 10, did they cause any anxiety at CDC over the winter months?
Whenever we see novel influenza viruses emerging to infect humans, there's always a cause for concern, and we attempt to better understand what the potential risk is of these viruses for causing more widespread and sustainable infections in humans. So in each case, there is an attempt to follow up and to better understand the epidemiology and links to infection of animal species in this situation.
Let's talk about the clinical presentation of this particular variant. How would a clinician be suspicious that they're dealing with one of the variant strains? Is there anything in the clinical presentation that might be different than one of the traditional flu strains?
No, there's no way that you can clinically distinguish between infection with this H3N2V virus or, in fact, any other animal influenza A virus, including swine or avian influenza viruses, compared to seasonal human influenza A or B virus infections, particularly children. They're really the same signs and symptoms initially.
And this particular virus did have the ability to infect person-to-person transmission. How worrisome is that for you?
Not all the cases have shown evidence of human-to-human transmission. About half of the cases have shown evidence of exposure to swine in the history leading up to the infection. But there are a handful of cases that have no evidence for exposure to pigs, and human-to-human infection or transmission is suspected. So that's always a concern, again, when we see a novel non-human influenza virus that has ability to transmit from person to person. But I should say in this case, there is still, it's limited in its ability to do so.
Okay.
What I would add in terms of the diagnosis and clinical suspicion is that, as mentioned, there's really nothing in the clinical signs and symptoms to distinguish between seasonal influenza A or B virus infection and H3N2V virus infection. However, as Dr. Katz mentioned, some of these cases, and all except for one, have been in children. You know, a history of recent contact, really in the week prior to illness onset, with pigs, whether they're well-appearing pigs or sick pigs, that can be helpful. As Dr. Katz noted, not all of these cases have had a history of exposure to pigs, and some of these children, in fact, are thought to have had limited, non-sustained human-to-human transmission, so spread from another person and typically another child. But at least the history, if it can be elicited, of recent exposure to pigs could be helpful to make someone suspect infection with this virus.
Dr. Katz, those cross-reactive antibodies that you write about in your MMWR article this week, you say that they offer some limited protection. Can you sort of just generally give us a quick rundown of how much protection that really means?
What we were trying to determine was what proportion of humans might have some level of antibody that would indicate a level of protection against the H3N2 variant virus. So we looked at three populations. We looked at children, younger adults, and older adults. And in each case, we looked at a pre-vaccination state, and in some of the age groups we also could look at the consequences of seasonal vaccination. And in children we really found, or children less than 10, we really found no evidence of any serum antibodies that cross-reacted with the H3N2 variant virus. And we used a marker for this cross-protective antibody, which is a threshold that we commonly understand offers some level of protection in populations against influenza viruses in general. Mm-hmm. However, for any given individual, we can't say that any particular amount of antibody is going to fully protect that individual. So we're really talking more about what we expect at the population level. Mm-hmm. So in adults, we found about one-third of people before vaccination had evidence of this cross-reactive antibody. And in older adults, the proportion was a little lower, around 17%. But following vaccination in adults and older adults, we saw a modest boost in the amount of antibody that was produced to the variant virus. However, it wasn't near the level of antibody that was produced following vaccination to the seasonal virus, as you would expect. So we think that the seasonal vaccines really offer limited protection and would not be optimal for protection against the H3N2 variant virus.
You had also mentioned in your article that you've isolated a vaccine virus that you could use to produce a vaccine if this virus ends up being problematic. Can you tell us a little more information about that? Should that reassure?
Sure. We are, I think, one step ahead of the game in that
yeah.
we do have a candidate vaccine virus produced, and in fact, it's currently in development as a vaccine and could be ready for testing in humans in the coming months.
This virus certainly keeps you on your toes at the CDC, it seems.
Yes, all influenza viruses do that.
Right, all of them.
Could I just add a few other things that might be helpful for the clinician audience?
Of course.
Please do.
So one thing is that, again, all except one of these cases have occurred or at least been identified among children,
mm-hmm.
and many of these cases have presented with sort of mild upper respiratory tract infection with fever, and many have tested positive by rapid influenza diagnostic tests. Now,
mm-hmm.
that's actually pretty good because we know that these rapid influenza diagnostic tests lack sensitivity, that many false negatives can occur.
Yep.
However, these rapid tests, although they're okay and they have picked up some of these infections, they give you very limited information. In other words, these tests can say a positive is a positive for influenza A, but it cannot distinguish between a seasonal influenza A virus and a swine influenza A
sure.
virus. And so the specific identification of these virus infections has been through sophisticated molecular testing and, in fact, sequencing of viruses. So this all sort of highlights the importance of clinicians collecting specimens from patients and then sending them for virus culture and further detailed analysis to their state health laboratories. And these state health laboratories, in fact, then when they identify a virus that they think is either an unusual virus or they can't identify it, it's sent on to CDC where our colleagues do the specific identification. And in fact, that's how these cases have been identified. So the other thing I'd mention is that this specific virus has the M gene from the pandemic influenza virus, which originally came from so-called Eurasian swine lineage. And the point of that is that this H3N2V virus, similar to the pandemic virus, which is now a seasonal human influenza virus, is resistant to the adamantane class of antivirals comprised
oh,
of
yeah.
amantadine and rimantadine. So mm-hmm. we do not recommend the use of amantadine or rimantadine for treatment of this kind of infection, H3N2V, or any influenza virus infections at this time. What
right.
we do recommend from CDC is the use of the neuraminidase inhibitors oseltamivir, trade name Tamiflu, or Relenza, trade name, I'm sorry, Zanamivir, trade name Relenza.
Uh-huh.
And So this virus, H3N2 V virus, is susceptible to oseltamivir or zanamivir. And okay. So many of these cases have been treated early with oseltamivir, particularly in very young children, for which zanamivir is not approved for less than 7 for treatment. But oseltamivir is approved down to age 1, and in fact, CDC recommends it down to birth for treatment of influenza. So the other thing is that most of these cases have had rather uncomplicated mm-hmm. influenza illness, and they've all fully recovered.
So fortunately, the management piece is not going to be different for this variant than the traditional seasonal.
That's right. And early treatment of influenza, including H3N2 V virus infection, is very important. We know that early antiviral treatment is most effective in reducing the signs and symptoms of illness mm-hmm. And can prevent further complications.
Well, we want to thank you for spending time with us today, Dr. Katz and Dr. Uecke.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much.
That was our 151st edition, and all earlier ones may be found at podcasts.jwatch.org. We come to you from Journal Watch, whose website is jwatch.org. Clinical Conversations executive producer is Ador Yano. I'm Joe Elia. Dr. Danielle Schurer and I thank you for listening and invite you, please, listen again soon.